Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
This is the Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Brian Rusk.
Back by popular demand, we have Ambassador Eric M. Javits on this program. And where we hail from regularly in this program in Buffalo, I can remember meeting with his uncle when he was trying to run for his last election. And I met him at the Statler Hotel by the elevator, and I took him to the Erie County Republican Executive Committee for an endorsement. Well, we have the nephew on the program, back by popular demand. Eric Javits was U.S. Permanent Representative to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons from 2003 to 2009 under President George W. Bush. U.S. Representative to the Conference on Disarmament from 2001 to 2003 under George W. Bush. And as I mentioned, his uncle was Jacob Javits. He was educated at Stanford University, Columbia University, with a bachelor's and Juris Doctorate. A very gifted statesman, and we're happy to have him on the Rusk Report today as we blanket 17 states and much of Canada. Ambassador Javits, people are confounded by U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer and remarks calling for a new election for the President of Israel. Most people say it's a foolish statement. Getting involved in the domestic affairs of an ally, a foreign country, and it would be as dumb as Netanyahu calling for a new election for the U.S. Senator from the state of New York. What do you make of this? Isn't it ridiculous?
This is not the first time the government of the United States, particularly the Democratic Party especially, has tried to interfere in the politics, domestic politics of Israel. They really do not like Netanyahu. I'm not sure they even like Israel or appreciate it as our most important ally in the Middle East. We've lived through some very turbulent times since before World War II and post-World War. And we've learned certain lessons that you can't go it alone in the world. Israel can't go it alone. The U.S. can't go it alone. Any superpower who tries to go it alone is, I think, very short-sighted. Because if you do that, you build up antagonisms, enmities, you alienate other countries, and you, very importantly, dull and dent your ability to influence world affairs. Israel is a vibrant democracy, a very dedicated and strong ally of the United States, a determined opponent of Iran, and of anything that would be, inhumane in terms of the Middle East as far as treatment of peoples go. They suffered an enormously ravaging and demolishing attack against individuals, against their people. I won't describe the savagery that was involved, but it's horrific. And if it happened to the United States, as it did at one point in time when the towers went down, how would we have felt of an important ally telling us, you know, stop going after ISIS? Just, you know, ask for peace or a ceasefire. For Schumer to do that to Israel really takes the mask off their party politics and also is an enormous disservice to U.S. in every respect, not just security, but prestige, the ability to hold allies close Because, you know, if you can't trust the U.S. to treat Israel right, how could any other country expect to be treated right by the United States instead of being thrown overboard the minute it's convenient? So I think Schumer lost his way. He's a politician. He obviously senses the anti-Semitism and the growing support that you see on the street for supporting the uprisings from Gaza. I personally think that Schumer has discredited himself to the point that he could even think about getting out of politics, because he's only liked in some pockets of very strong anti-U.S. sentiment.
Some conservative Jews in the United States refer to him and Bernie Sanders as Jew-hating Jews.
Well,
and they feel it's really an affront to the Jewish community to go against the state of Israel.
Well, I'm not saying they're Jew haters. I'm saying that if you're on the other side of their sentiment, it feels like they are. I'm not saying they are, but what they're doing certainly shows derision and contempt for Jewish interests, and especially U.S. interests.
Let's talk about aid for Israel. It seems to be being held up because many of the conservatives in Congress want to have the border, our border, shut down because they feel we should not be paying attention to the borders of the Ukraine and Israel when we have no southern border. And I've heard estimates 12 million to 15 million illegal migrants have come into this country in the last 3 years.
Well, today they've revised the figures to 13.7 million.
Terrible.
So at least it's that, and it's probably more. I would think, in response to the bind that Congress finds itself in, trying to take a look at where we stand, we're being hamstrung by an administration that doesn't know what it's doing. It simply doesn't. And the Congress is very divided. The Democrats aren't thinking of the country first. They're thinking of party first. And the Republicans are basically thinking of country first, because they realize that unless they can get the border closed, we're about to lose our country. It's only a question of terrorism when it's going to occur. And it may actually have occurred already on that crash on the bridge. You never know.
Yeah, well, there were many lives were lost on that bridge in Baltimore. And I believe they're still searching for, I think, six people still lost. It sounds a little odd that a ship of that size would lose power right before going into a bridge.
Well, they think that there might have been some kind of technological interference with the steering of the ship or control of the ship. And if that is a fact, and if they discover that, then there's nothing else but terrorism that would do that.
Just a horrible crisis, and it's going to hamper one of the top ports in the world from functioning perhaps months or years.
Our national economy and the regional economy, it's devastating. Absolutely. It's probably going to take at least 2 years to correct, an enormous expense.
Let's go more into depth about giving billions of dollars to Israel for their defense. Is this needed now? How much should we give? When should we give? Tell us your opinion, Ambassador Eric James.
Well, I don't think you can really single out Israel as far as our acting with alacrity and in time against what we're facing. Take a look at the situation Israel expects to have to deal with Hezbollah on the north It's short of ammunition. It's doing everything it can, and it's being hamstrung and obstructed by the United States to even deal with the Gaza situation. We should be looking at the whole world situation, not just Israel. Israel is probably the most important cog in the Middle East and key to survival of Western interests in the Middle East. We were so close with Jordan, United Arab Emirates, and Saudi on the Accords, which Trump had moving very well. Iran, I think, brought on this whole Gaza thing to break that possibility of those Accords. And when you talk about, do we act correctly? Are we giving the aid to Ukraine that Ukraine needs right now?
Mm-hmm.
Are we opening up our oil production to a point where the prices drop and we actually start to starve the Iranians and the Russians' economies so that they don't have the money to wage war and wage terrorism? No, we're not doing anything which we could be doing on a global scale that would make sense from America's security interests and defending our own country and the interests of democracy around the world. We're simply failing to the point where you have to suspect that it's purposeful. I hate to say that, because it implies that our own government doesn't even regard American interests as their interests, in spite of their oaths of office and in spite of the fact that we're staring them right in the face. But we have to weather through this until the election. We have to make every effort to make sure that we can change the government. And then we have to worry also in a new administration if they are going to get it right. Because getting it right isn't easy because so much damage has been done. We have so many illegals, and I'm not sure we even should call them illegals. They're invaders. They've invaded our country. And if you take a look at the hordes that were charging against the police, the National Guardsmen, who were trying to hold them in bay, they didn't care about the fact that they were causing a riot and causing absolute effort to batter their opponents and walk over them into America. I mean, and you even have the United States trying to prevent Texas from protecting its own border. The U.S. government isn't supporting Texas or working with them. They're working against them. So you have to think, what is wrong with our government? It just doesn't care about the country or having a country. Because when you don't have a border, you don't have a country. And this whole idea of holding a vote when there's so much dissension and so much disorder and so much illegality and civil strife. You know, if you want to end a riot, you don't stand back and let them just loot. You step in. If you shoot one person, that's the end of the whole thing. You never have to do anything else. And you don't need to have fatal bullets to do it. You can do it with rubber bullets. But that would imply that law and order is the order of the day. Not that allowing civil strife and disorder to thrive, which is what's going on in America. And so most Americans, unless they live in very small pockets of ideologues in Michigan, New York, or California, really believe that we're giving the country away.
Yes, where we hail with this taping in New York State, there are 200,000 illegal migrants in New York City, costing the taxpayers in New York State $2.4 billion a year for housing, medicine, education.
Well, this is not philanthropy. This is theft. Theft from citizens with their hard-earned taxes that they pay from really hard-earned incomes. And then they see these monies stolen and gifted to undeserving invaders not just illegal people, but invaders and sappers and parasites. And if you want to break down the will of people to work and be honest and make a living, this is the best way to do it, rewarding those who don't. And that's exactly what the government seems to be have as their objective, to reward people who normally wouldn't deserve anything. They're invaders. They're not people who have tried hard to work, have a problem for health or physically or mentally, and simply can't earn or their own way, that need the help. This isn't philanthropy. This is corporate looting, government looting, and robbery, really, from the citizenry to transfer wealth to people that are not deserving.
We're learning a great deal from a great diplomat and ambassador, Eric M. Javits, our guest. We've had him on this program probably 6 or 7 times in the last few years, a real expert on world affairs. He tells it like it is, and we're honored to have him. If you're listening in Buffalo, New York, Washington, D.C., or Montreal with our 50,000 watts of clear channel power, drop us a note. Please write to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. A little plug here, Western New Yorkers love their traditions, and the AmPol Legal newspaper has been writing about Polish American traditions and events for over 50 years. News and features from a Polish American perspective can be found in this weekly newspaper, as well as recipes and a calendar of events. Don't miss out on the next cultural presentation or polka dance by reading the AmPol Legal. The AmPol Legal is available in many Tops and Wegmans stores. For home delivery, call 716-835-9454. That's 716-835-9454 to have the latest news from Poland and Polonia in your mailbox each week. And when Eric Javits' uncle was U.S. Senator, he was featured in the AmPol Legal dozens of times. A little more information about Eric Javits. He grew up in Connecticut and is a nephew of former U.S. Senator Jacob Javits, Republican, New York. His father, Benjamin Javits, was an attorney, philanthropist, and author, and was brought to the late Senator Javits. He graduated from Choate School in 1948 and then spent 1 year at Stanford University in California. Eric Javits transferred to Columbia College and graduated Phi Beta Kappa in 1952. He attended Columbia Law School and graduated in 1955. A great diplomat and statesman. I'd like to thank those who called regarding our recent guest, Pastor Chapman, Rochester, New York, entrepreneur Mario Danielli, who is Vice Consulate of Italy, and author Wendy Steele in Florida. Let's talk about the Ukraine. This is now going on a couple years. Over 100,000 people dead, probably $1 trillion in damage. When I look at the footage, it looks like Warsaw in 1939 when my parents were there and it was leveled. Let's talk about the Ukraine, what we should do. How do you see it, Ambassador Javits?
Well, it's very clear to me because I was alive in the 30s and I watched what happened with the Hitler's onslaught. If you don't stop an invasion and an aggression early, it gets worse and worse and worse. And Ukraine is our opportunity to halt the Russian advance and the dreams of empire that Putin entertains in his head. He's willing to expend a much larger population with many more expendables and that he can recruit and draft and send to the front. And he's lost an awful lot of lives. The Ukrainians, on the other hand, have a democracy. And their legislature has kept the draft age 27 or below. And they aren't going to reduce that, you know, so to keep people above 27 years old to be able to get them into the armed services. So you have a very difficult manpower problem. You also have a very difficult ammunition problem on the part of Ukraine. And I think they're outgunned and outmanned right now because the U.S. has been delaying and holding back the military armament help that we should have been giving them. And we've never given them the level of armament that they should have had in order to win. Our attitude is, don't let them win, just let them keep fighting and burning up lives on both sides, which is a terrible thing to do to an ally. Ukraine is a slowly dying tragedy. And if we don't get help to them quickly, and it's only the Europeans now that apparently seem nervous because they know they're next, Poland and Czechoslovakia. And Czechoslovakia is running around trying to find weaponry and armaments and shells all over the world to ship to Ukraine. So they're doing the job, but not nearly as well as if we were organized and sent them what they need, not only to hold the Russians, but to take back some of that territory. And before they took it all, I think Putin would be ready to negotiate. Right now, why would he negotiate? He's doing very well, and he just took Avdiivka, great loss to the Ukrainians, poor Ukrainian people that were caught on the line without the means to defend themselves. They're getting slaughtered, and we're doing nothing about it, which is a very sad situation, because our Republican Congress is demanding that the border be closed in order to do almost anything. They didn't have the guts to shut the total government down, which frankly, if I had been in the Congress, I would have voted to shut the government down. Because the Democrats don't stop at anything. The Republicans apparently are ready to compromise, but not get what is needed. What is needed is to build up our military and crash course right now, because otherwise it's going to be too late. It's almost too late, probably now. And to take a look at our budgeting and not do these omnibus budget bills with all kinds of earmarks, but one by one take the time and cut out the fat, and then take that money that's saved and put it toward defense, because otherwise we're going to be hit and we're going to be defenseless. It's not like World War II, when in 1940 and 41 all we had were wooden rifles, and we had time, because of the primitive state of war in that era, to build up within a year to be able to really get our defenses aligned to oppose the Axis. But right now we're not going to be able to oppose the Axis if they strike us, because it's going to be a horrendous strike. The weapons are just too enormous right now to contend with anything except deterrence. If you don't have what you need to deter, you're pretty much at the mercy of the opposition.
Terrible situation. Now I'd like to go to another front of the world with our guest, Ambassador Eric Javits. We have about 5 minutes left on the program. And again, Eric M. Javits was U.S. Permanent Representative of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons from 2003 to 2009 under President George W. Bush. Let's talk about China.
I want to just say one thing. Please. About OPCW, the Organization,
yes,
for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. I served those 6 years. It was the golden age of the OPCW. We got everything the U.S. wanted down to the last comma. And when I left, shortly after I left, they got the Nobel Peace Prize. The organization got it. I didn't get it. Individuals didn't get it. But we achieved so much that we got that recognition.
And now we have two wars going on under Biden. But I wanted to shift the focus now. If China is seeing a weak, paralyzed president of the United States, are we going to see Taiwan taken over by the Chinese in the next 5 years?
I think the Chinese can just wait. They can easily take the two islands that are close to their coast, Quemoy and Matsu, which would be a symbol of the fact that they want to ultimately control Taiwan. I don't really expect them to try an invasion, because it would be an enormously costly thing. It's 90 miles of water that they would have to cross. I think it's much more likely that they would try to embargo and starve the Taiwanese by not letting them have any shipment coming in from anywhere but China. But there are so many ties between Taiwan and China economically that I think the Chinese probably feel ultimately they will be able to convince the Taiwanese, and they're in no rush. Certainly not to lose a lot of lives and a lot of money in a military confrontation, which they know it's like going to court. You don't know whether you're going to win or lose. You really don't know once you start a war. So I think they're probably going to bully, threaten, maybe put a cordon around and try to starve the island. But I think they want to take it with all its wonderful production capacity intact when they finally get it. I don't think they want to wind up with a hot rock that's radioactive or useless in ruins when they finally get it.
We have a minute left. President Trump has said that he's going to try and end these wars if he wins the election between Election Day and the inauguration and sit down with these world leaders and end these wars. Is that possible?
I think it's not likely. I think it's his aspiration. He'd like to do that. I think that day has passed. I think that we've been damaged so much by the Biden administration and weakened so much and embarrassed so much and proven our lack of leadership and lack of cohesion as a society and as a nation, that he's going to find out he doesn't have the negotiating power. Even though he's such a great negotiator, he doesn't have the if you sit at a negotiating table and you don't have the military strength behind you, don't get anywhere. And I'm afraid he's going to find out that he's pretty much powerless and going to have to contend with a very big buildup and a very big change in America before he gets anywhere negotiating.
I'm sorry we have to bring the Rusk Report to a close. Our guest has been a great ambassador and diplomat, Eric M. Javits. We're very grateful for his sage advice, and special thanks to Kevin Carr, our director of production. Again, any thoughts or comments, please write to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520 Radio, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. Thank you for enlightening and educating us, Ambassador Eric M. Javits. Have a great week.
You've been listening to The Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at the Western New York community with news, features, and special guests. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Brian Rusk, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.
Lemonade! Fresh squeezed lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.